New York City Mayor Zohran Mamdani recently saying he thinks a Democratic Socialist can get elected anywhere across the country for any position.
What these candidates offer is a vision that extends beyond the midterms, it extends beyond 2028. It speaks to what makes so many of us proud to be Democrats. It speaks to a vision that goes back to a New Deal understanding of what working people deserve.
Well, that's funny. That's, he sounds so serious. He's got such a great smile, but oh my goodness, how insidious. Believe me, Democratic Socialists, are not like the New Deal under President Roosevelt. Mamdani, I'm surprised somebody must have written that for him. I'm sure he has no idea what the New Deal was. But Democratic Socialists are sweeping primaries in this country. That's the one group that's really having consistent victory. And they're coming to a state near you if they're not in your state already. And I want to talk about that today with a political consultant. And talk to him about how he would counsel Republican candidates running against these young Democratic Socialists who are as serious as death about creating a revolution in this country. And I'll just give you an idea, just for a second, of the things that they want to do. They want to eliminate the U.S. Senate. They want to destroy Christian nationalism and using the religious left to do that. They want to replace the president and the Supreme Court with an executive and judiciary chosen by and subordinate to Congress. They want amnesty for all immigrants, and they want to defund the Department of War. Wouldn't that be amazing? If our soldiers had no money to fight, wouldn't that be great? The Democratic Socialists think it would be great. They want to tax the rich, and that's probably most of you listening to me. There's no threshold. It's just if you have stuff and they don't have stuff, they're going to take your stuff, because that's, communism, which is what this is. They want to give free housing, Medicare, and college for everybody. You don't have to pay anymore. You can just go free. They're going to open up all the borders for all those poor people, south and north, who want to come in and get all these free things. I wonder if anybody will come in if the socialists take over and give free housing, free medical care free. I wonder if more people might come across that border. I think they might. And they're going to get mass amnesty if they come. They want voting rights for non-citizens and people with criminal convictions. And truly, actually, probably what they want is no elections at all. They'll just control things and you'll be so happy they'll take care of you. Well, that's what the Democratic Socialists of America, that's part of their vision for this country. It's very dangerous. And we're going to talk about it today. But first, well, we talk about how to save babies all the time and their mothers, because preborn focuses on the mom and the dad, if you'll come and talk to them, because they actually provide ultrasound images of the baby in the womb. And it's amazing. It's so powerful. You know, even if it's not your baby and you see that, it's just an amazing, just amazing, really, to me, a sign of the existence of God and his handiwork. Because how in the world can you explain the intricacies, the development in the gestational period of babies, to have, you know, fingers sucking and little eyes and a little cute nose? And you can sometimes even already see that the baby looks like a person, the mother or the father or grandmother or something. And it's very moving. And so what they do is powerful, and so we want to give them a shout-out all the time. And they help support this show. That's the least important thing I want to tell you. But I'm grateful that they do, because I'm so grateful they're our partners. It's very important to me to save lives. I felt that way for, you know, since I even became aware of abortion when I was 21. It was shocking to me. So if you want to help Preborn provide those ultrasounds, it's $28 for one ultrasound. Go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy, and make your most generous donation. All right. Well, we're going to be kind of dissecting a little bit, at least, about the Democratic Socialist victory and how Republicans should respond to this. What's the right way and the wrong way? How can we neutralize this and stop this movement of the Democratic Socialist in the United States of America? Rick Shafton, political consultant, will join me next on this edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.
From American Family Radio, Sandy Rios.
We are not called to be nice. We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
I think the most important thing we need to demonstrate to our children is genuineness.
that we actually believe what we say we believe.
A longtime Fox News contributor, Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
Seek justice, not social justice, but God's justice, what's right and what's wrong.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association,
a pro-life radio talk show host.
We've got to say this is the line. Life is sacred.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
We're running a campaign to do three simple things. We want to get money out of politics, put money in your pocket, pass Medicare for All.
I'm an original co-sponsor of Medicare for All with Bernie and my opponent, Seth Moulton. He won't co-sponsor it.
You don't have to bow the knee to corporations that are taking from our communities, that we get a Medicare for All if we fight for it.
This movement has always been bigger than one person. It's about taking on a system rigged against working people.
We're winning because we stand for Medicare for All. We stand against the genocide. We stand against foreign wars. We stand for taxing billionaire wealth. We stand for a living wage.
We know that we can afford strong public schools, Medicare for All, affordable housing.
Our movement is building working class people power.
All right, Sandy Rios with you. And yes, the world is now filling up with Democratic socialists winning races around the country. We already have many of them in the Congress, like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and Rashida Tlaib. And now Claire Valdez is the candidate from Queens and Brooklyn. Darialitza Avila Chevalier is the Democratic primary winner in Manhattan and Bronx. And Milot Kiros, and we're going to hear from her in just a second because, boy, she's good. She's running in Colorado. And Kai Newkirk is running in Arizona's 4th. Oliver Larkin is running in Florida in District 25. And we could go on and on because that's not all. We had Grant Plattner, who just resigned, but he was a formidable opponent in Maine, so to Susan Collins. So we really are in trouble. I think there's no doubt about that. But I guess I would, my opening shot to all of you is here. Come on. We've fought communism before and we've defeated it. And a good straight talk to the American people, I think, is the anecdote for this kind of mess. And so that's what we're going to be talking about today. My guest is Rick Schaft, and he was with me recently. I like Rick a lot. He's a political consultant. He's part of, he runs Neighborhood Research and Media, and he's real straight talking. That's really why I like him. And so, Rick, good morning. Thanks for joining me.
Good morning, Sandy. Thanks for having me on here.
You know, one of the things that is bothering me, Rick, is I'm going to give an illustration. I hear these really smooth talking, candidates, and they promise everything. You know, you need help, and we want to give you money and pay for your child care and all of your medical, and we want free transportation and free housing, and we're going to make sure that happens because you deserve that. It reminds me of a Burger King commercial. But this is the response.
Yeah, listen to that freak show montage you had on a few minutes right before there.
Yes. Yes, exactly. All right, so, but Rick, I want to give you just a quick example here. This is a young Republican, I think in Colorado. And he's responding to the socialist surge, and they have a real, really, really good candidate there, which I'll play a clip from her later. But this is his response. This is clip 4.
On the other side of the aisle, the RNC also weighing in. Central Regional Communications Director Zach Kraft telling the National News Desk the country saw a, quote, political earthquake unfold during last week's primaries in New York, which saw multiple DSA-backed candidates pull off upsets, adding that wave of socialism is coming to Colorado.
Because at this point in the Colorado Democratic Party, if you are not a full-blown crazy communist, totally on board with abolishing ICE, open borders, Green New Deal, everything and more, there is no room for you in the modern Democrat Party. That is how far to the left they have become.
Okay, so Rick, fair enough. I mean, that's all true, but I want to talk to you, the political strategist, about how Republicans should respond, especially candidates, should respond to socialist candidates. What's the most effective way from your perspective?
Well, the first thing is that you can't let them off the socialists are easy because they'll just do it to themselves. The bigger concern for Republicans is all the Democrats who claim they're not communists, because these people are really communists. just call it what it is. So you're going to have, like, I was reading the Politico the news briefing this morning, right? And twice they described Kathy Hochul as a moderate Democrat. Now, that Kathy Hochul is like a left-wing crackpot.
Exactly.
But in today's Democratic Party, that makes her a moderate. And what they're going to do is they're going to try to say, "Oh, I'm not like this. I'm a moderate. I'm a Kansas Democrat. I'm a, you know, whatever." They're going to try to claim they are that they're not. And Republicans can't let them get away with this. Now, let me flip it on its head and just so people can relate to this. We've all seen these wimpy politicians on abortion. So they go out and they say, "Oh, I'm pro-choice. I support a woman's right to choose," right? And then the Democrats say they're opposed to all abortions, even to rape and incest, even if the mother would die, which is what Democrats taught me to do to Republicans, just to accuse them of having these positions. Then the Republican gets up and says, "No, that's not true. That's a lie. I'm pro-abortion. I support abortion." Well, what happens then? All the pro-life people are like, "Well, I can't vote for this guy." I mean, Mark Robinson, who ran for governor of North Carolina, made an ad. He talked about how he and his wife, you know, he supported his wife's decision to have an abortion, didn't seem apologetic about it. I know many people who could not vote for Mark Robinson because of that. So flipping it back to the Democrats, every Democratic candidate now has to take pass this purity test of how communistic they are. So in my district in eastern North Carolina, we have Don Davis, who's votes with Republicans more than 95% of the Democrats there because he's in a district that's been redrawn to become more Republican. Now it's a Trump plus 8 district, I believe. So he's going to try to run like, "I'm not one of these socialists. I voted against the trannies, and I voted against this and, you know, that." Okay, but here's the thing. You're part of this party. Now, he really can't say this stuff. The Republicans are going to be, or the left wants to cower Republicans into saying, "You can't say that. It's not accurate." And what I learned from Democrats is just say it, make them deny it. And they can't deny it. Because if they deny it, then the crazies on the left side of the party just think of us as being the crazies on the right, right? And the pro-life issue and other issues, right? Well, the people on their side, you can't take that position. You have to be against ICE. You have to hate Israel. You have to be for, you know, and I don't call it Medicare for all. It's Medicaid for all. Let's just be, you know, be honest about it. This is about putting the whole country on Medicaid, right?
Exactly.
So Republicans have to be bold. They just have to say, "This is what you're for." And, "Oh, I'm not for it." Well, that's what you say today. But then when they pressure you, you'll change your mind and you'll be for it. And we all know that's true because that's what they're all doing. They're all changing. And, you know, people who were, this has happened over decades. People who were conservative Democrats in the 1970s, by the 1980s, were voting with the far left on everything. Because the party said, "Well, you want to be committee chair, you want to head a subcommittee, this is what you have to do." Now it's, if you want to get reelected, this is what you have to do.
And, no, that's
Dan
true.
Dan Goldman, right? Dan Goldman in Brooklyn, in that district over there, a very liberal Democrat, but he was like pro-Israel, so he loses 2-1.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, exactly. So, but here, you know, the thing I was illustrating with that young Republican, Rick, which is a little bit different, I'm thinking to myself, though, that sometimes that, look, they're crazy. They are. He was absolutely right. You're flaming. You're a crazy communist. You know, if you, they're all crazy communists. But I think that maybe we might need to take a little more intellectual approach to this, exposing them. For instance, their push toward, you know, everything free, and how that's worked out in communist countries. There's got to be a concise way to say that. You know, go to North Korea, go to Russia, and the communist state. Go to Cuba right now. See how that collectivism is working. See how that, you know, they all have medical care, medical insurance. It's equal. They all have access to it, which means they have none. I mean, I think maybe we have to have some more meat on the responses, more knowledge than just they're all crazy communists.
Yes, but, you know, candidates can't do the educational part of it. That's where Ron Paul always fell apart. Ron Paul was trying to educate people. He wasn't trying to win an election. And that's why politics are not about convincing people you're right. They're about convincing people they agree with you. So this is where Trump is so successful, because nobody really knows what Donald Trump believes in. They just know he's on their side. So Donald Trump could take some position that if a Democrat took it, we'd never support it. And they were like, tariffs are a perfect example. Then the left was pushing for tariffs for years. We were all against it. Suddenly Trump's for it. Now everybody's for tariffs. See, so.
No, I see what you're saying.
Politics are not really more about the actual issues. It's more about whose side are you on. We're in a completely polarized world now. And people have to, it's like, well, gee, I'm a social liberal. It's like, well, too bad. You know what? You want to have an abortion so bad, go live in a communist country, because that's what you're going to get when you vote for abortion. So you have to decide what's more important, living in freedom or having an abortion. That's what you have to decide. Yeah. And that's the approach I've ever always taken. I've never had let candidates ever apologize for being pro-life. They have to say, I'm pro-life. That's my position. You don't like it? Go vote for the communists. Fine.
Exactly. No, I'm with you on that. But, Rick, why do you think that so many of these socialists are prevailing in their races?
Very simple. Because the Democratic Party, you know, for years, even into the 1960s, and even beyond that, the elections were still, it was still like we're voting on the Civil War. There was two things. If you were a Southerner or if you were a Catholic, you were a Democrat. If you were a Protestant, you were a Northerner, you were a Republican. That's pretty much how elections broke out for years. Then it totally changed, really, it started with Goldwater, actually, when it became more about issues. And it just continued over time. So the Democratic Party, I mean, I remember listening to the late, great Howard Phillips in 1976, spoke about how if Republicans took the United States Senate, that a number of conservative Democratic committee chairs would be replaced by liberal Republicans. It was just fascinating. I mean, at the time, it was like reading the list.
Yes, I remember those days.
John Stennis will get replaced by Jacob Javits. It was like, you know, those types of things. That's not the case today.
No.
Right?
No.
We're told the Republican Party is the conservative party. The Democratic Party is the liberal party. And there's no room for, I mean, 20 years ago, it was 2006, I beat a candidate in a Democratic primary, and we ran far to the right of that candidate, who is not a liberal himself. And, I mean, we were calling ourselves conservative Democrats putting taxpayers first. You could not win as a Democrat with that slogan today. First off, it's not even believable. Nobody would believe that a Democrat's going to put taxpayers first. 20 years ago, before Barack Obama, it was very believable.
Right. Well, my own
parts of the United States where people are listening right now, where in 2004, John Kerry won their county 2-1 over George Bush. And that same county voted 2 or 3-1 for Donald Trump. So those conservative Democrats are no longer in the party.
That's right. No, I know that's true. My parents were Democrats way, way back, and they changed because of all the reasons we're talking about. And I can confirm, Rick, I remember when races were never about the moral issues. They weren't. I think abortion is the thing that changed it all. It was higher taxes, lower taxes. It was always like everybody was a patriot. The Democrats were patriots for the most part. The Republicans were patriots for the most part, although they did represent big business, were often greedy and thought of themselves over the country. But for the most part, everybody was in it to make America better. But they disagreed on, you know, how to get there.
Wow.
But boy, that horse has left the barn. It's just no longer that. We're really dealing with some very serious stuff. So,
And the pro-life issue has galvanized a lot. That really changed 30 years ago, because before 1995, the pro-life issue was pretty much an Irish Catholic issue. I mean, you didn't see evangelicals were really strong on it. You didn't see non-Irish Catholics really that strong on it. 1995 was a fascinating year because three things happened. The confluence of three rivers came together. One, the partial birth abortion issue. And, you know, the dirty little secret is nobody ever lost for voting for partial birth abortion. But what it did was it made people realize, wow, that's actually a baby. They're popping the hole in the back of the neck and sucking the brains out, as I actually put in a commercial once. I actually described it that way. And So people now realize, oh, that's an actual baby. That was the first thing. The second thing was the ultrasounds coming around. And people started to see an ultrasound. And it's like, I remember I saw my kids' ultrasound. That's the day I became totally pro-life. I mean, I was politically pro-life, but I wasn't really that pro-life. Yeah. When I saw my kids' ultrasound, I became pro-life. That's a baby.
It's funny that you
should. The third thing.
Go ahead.
Which nobody really talks about, was the coming of age of the abortion generation, where a lot of women who had abortions in the 70s and 80s were now in their 40s and 50s, and they're becoming politically active. And it seemed like 1995 was the year that I noticed pro-life meetings had younger women at them, and abortion survivors, and it's just that after 1995, being pro-life was not the negative it was before that.
Well, of course, it really
changed a lot.
Yeah, well, that, as you well know, Rick, that happened on the backs of lots of work of pro-lifers who took a beating in the 80s, were made fun of,
yeah.
mocked. They were the object of ridicule in movies. I mean, this just went on. And there was such good research that came out, and you're right about the ultrasound, all of that, that really changed the hearts and minds of people. And I'd also like to point out, remember, Rick, there were hardly any abortions before. People just didn't get abortions. It was very rare before 1973. Before it became legalized. It was unheard of. I'm not saying nobody did it, but it was, trust me, growing up, if anybody got an abortion, well, I hardly even knew what it was, to be honest with you, as I was a teenager. So that was like not even a subject that was discussed publicly. So when it became public and became, you know, the Supreme Court kind of foisted abortion upon us in 1973, that was really the turning point. But anyway, you are absolutely right that issues were not issues. Before that, politics was different. It was pretty bland. It was personalities. It was taxes, lower, maybe national security and stuff like that. But the moral issues
Even abortion, Sandy. I mean, Ronald Reagan signed an abortion law in 1967, long before Roe v. Wade, 67 or 68, somewhere in there. And one of the leading opponents was a liberal Catholic assemblyman from Los Angeles, and one of the sponsors was a member of the John Birch Society.
Oh, I didn't know that. I didn't know any of that.
Yeah.
Well, all right.
It was just a different time. I mean, it was a different issue. And what happened was, politics used to be, you know, culture, you know, in the sense of I'm Catholic, I'm a Southerner, I'm a Democrat.
Yes,
I mean,
exactly.
I would never think of being a Republican. I grew up in Georgia, right? I could never be a Republican. That's the party that burned my state. You know, that's the party that killed the Irish people, right?
Yeah.
And nobody thinks like that anymore.
No.
Like, nobody thinks like that.
No, I know.
Like,
it's a lot.
And similarly, no black people are Republicans because Lincoln freed the slaves. Like, none.
Well, some of them are. Some of the intellectual blacks are doing that. You know, they figured that out, and they are. But you're right. Most Republican black Americans aren't that because they understood that. But let's talk a little bit about the political landscape for this the coming midterms. It's, I don't know, Rick, I just read this piece this morning in the Political Globe. I've never even heard of it. I think it's out of Michigan. And, of course, the Democrats have to win 4 seats to control the Senate.
Yeah.
And Republicans hold, well, they are currently, depending on, you know, who's living and who isn't and who's there, like Mitch McConnell, 53-47. But I'm reading here that the Democrats really are going to have to struggle to take the Senate as they are planning to do. I wonder what your thoughts are about that.
Yeah, because, here's the factor. Are the Republican candidates going to identify the Democrats who are going to try to pretend they're some kind of like moderate, like the guy in Iowa, I'm a prairie populist, whatever that is, right? Then we got Roy Cooper over here doing the Jimmy Carter routine in North Carolina. Yeah, and so you have all these Democrats. You got Ossoff, who's pretending to be some kind of moderate in Georgia. So you have these Democrats that are going to try to pretend that they're moderates. Now, the thing for Republicans is they need to say that if Democrats win, this is their agenda, this is what they're going to do. What are they going to do? They're going to get rid of the Supreme Court. You know, they're pack the Supreme Court, do a end the Electoral College, get rid of the filibuster, pass the whole communist agenda.
Make D.C. a
state. Republicans need to say this.
Yeah, right.
And they can't have some idiot in the campaign say, well, they never actually got up and this candidate didn't say it himself. And say, well, just accuse him of it and make him deny it. Then when he denies it, say he's lying, which he probably is anyway. And we call them out. This is what they do to us. Why should we be nicer than they are?
Yeah, well, I believe in fighting. I believe in fighting for what's right. I don't believe in slander, but I believe in fighting. And fighting hard, and there's
the
plenty
truth
of
is good enough. I mean, yeah, this is what they're going to do in office. We know
right.
that. You see this?
Right.
Look at Virginia, right? Yet Abigail Selma, a moderate Democrat, worked for the CIA. Well, now they're in there, and they're turning Virginia into California as quickly as they possibly can, mm-hmm. and that's what they do. And there's another difference in the two parties because I've been on both these sides. When I worked with Democrats, we did municipal elections, but that we had that reorganization meeting. And that was the day every head got chopped off in town. The first day everybody showed up with the carnations and happiness and everything. We just have a little brief business session, a few minutes. The business session for a few minutes was to replace every single person on the other side with our people. Every single person. I don't care who it was. We replaced them all. Yeah. And then we had the ceremony. It was all happy and, you know, right?
Yeah.
But and Republicans just said, Rome wasn't built in a day.
No,
how many times have I heard
true.
That?
Yeah, that's right.
Patience.
Yes, I know.
Half a loaf's better than no loaf. like, we're told we have to wait. They go and push everything. And so, well, you know, we don't want to lose the next election. Democrats don't worry about losing the next election because they know Republicans won't undo what they've done. And the first person to actually undo some of this stuff is Donald Trump, of all people.
Absolutely. It's not something. It's true.
And it's a lot that he's undone.
Rick, yes, and he's still undoing it. Rick, on Spanberger, look, she ran tried to run as a moderate Democrat. And for those of you, I'm sorry we're throwing these names around, she's currently the start to say mayor. The governor of Virginia, she's a nightmare. She was former CIA. She was the one who beat Dave Brat in District 7, which was just stomach-turning way back. But she's a deceiver, a liar. And I honestly can't believe she won based on her continued endorsement of the lieutenant governor who had said publicly that he'd hoped to see the Speaker of the House children killed. He'd love to see them killed in their mother's arms. Yeah, so
I'll tell you why, because the Republican was a clown.
Yeah, she was.
I mean, it's just like, this is Glenn Youngkin. He's trying to have, I don't know, first off, he picks this woman, Winsome Sears, to be his lieutenant governor. Why, nobody knows, other than she's black. Because she was a one-term state rep who didn't run for re-election. One-term state rep, didn't run for re-election. Then she endorsed Tim Kaine in 2018, or essentially did by telling everybody to write in her name. Somehow they made her lieutenant governor, which has no responsibility in the state of Virginia other than casting a tie in a 2020 Senate, which didn't exist. And so they run her for governor, and every time she spoke, she would open as a black woman. You're running for governor of Virginia. You're not running for, like, class president.
Yeah.
And it was just silly. There was no message other than I'm a black woman. And the rest of the ticket was nothing there. It was like no campaign. So
in her defense,
Winsome
Sears had some moments where she said some really profound things as lieutenant governor. You know, because I remember those. I was in Virginia at the time, and I thought, oh, she sounds great. But I attest exactly to what you just said. She was absent on the campaign trail. I know there were many people in media who had important positions of influence all over Virginia who she would ignore. That she wouldn't even come on their radio show. She wouldn't return their calls. She was
she couldn't answer their questions. That's why.
She was very much a prima donna. And it was
not qualified.
Yeah, so okay, so now we have Spanberger. And I think we would both agree that Spanberger is a democratic socialist. Would you agree?
Yep.
Yeah.
But all Democrats are like that. It doesn't make a difference who they are. If they have the ability, like Andy Beshear in Kentucky, it's, oh, I'm not a communist like these other people. Well, yeah, because you have no votes in the legislature, so you can't do anything. So you can get away with saying whatever. It's like Roy Cooper could do the same thing. He had a Republican General Assembly in North Carolina for 8 years. So his craziest ideas would never go anywhere because he had that limitation. But you give these people a free hand like they have in Virginia now, and this is what they do.
Yeah. Hey, listen, I want to ask you about North Carolina, since you've mentioned it a couple of times and that's your home state. I remember Roy Cooper from the bathroom, trans bathroom, huge controversy about the NCAA blocking them from coming. I can't even remember the details, but he was right in the middle of all that. But is he running for, I don't even know, is he running for Senate?
He was our governor for 8 years here, and he won in 2016 because, and you mentioned the whole tranny issue and everything. What happened was North Carolina passed HB2, which banned, you know, the transgender stuff. Well, everybody freaked out for some reason because it wasn't the issue in 2016 isn't the way the issue is seen in 2026. There's a lot of people like, oh, well, I feel sorry for them. Oh, let's help the poor people out, right? You know, it's just bathroom seat. That was the other thing, was we allowed it to be called a bathroom bill, which ridiculed
it. That's right.
So the governor wasn't really on board, and he was running for re-election, and he lost, basically, because he was trying to be on all sides of it. Then the Republicans in the legislature decided to repeal the bill, basically. I mean, they actually repealed HB2, so they voted pro-trans Republicans. This is 2017 or 2018, something like that. Now, today it's all changed because people have seen what that brought about. And there's a lot of people changing on a lot of issues. It's like Tom Emmer, who was head of the House Somali Caucus, is now attacking the Somalis in the state.
Don't get me started on him. Yeah, But Roy Cooper.
Nothing like reality to wake people up.
It's the truth. Who's running against Roy, and what's the state of that race?
Well, it's Michael Whatley's the nominee. He's the former state Republican chairman. So far, his campaign's been pretty content-free and pretty safe, and he's losing, although I saw in one poll only 4 points, which would be good if he's only down 4. Because the state is essentially a Republican state. People moving here. Yeah, people say, oh, it's all these Northerners moving in. It's all these Northerners escaping blue America. So I'm not worried about it. It's like all the Northerners moving to Florida did not make that state Democratic.
Rick,
you know?
Not yet. That's my state. But, hey, Rick, on Michael Whatley, you may or may not want to weigh in on this. I don't have I shouldn't say. He's the Republican nominee, and he's certainly better than Roy Cooper. But why can't North Carolina get good candidates? I guess the same everywhere, but why? 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 Not
well,
somebody
first off,
who's...
Do people really want to be a U.S. senator for $174,000 a year, even though... Yeah, you can do stock trading or whatever, but, you know, to get there, right, you have to, like, not work for a year, at least. It's, you know, Congress, anything. Like, if you want to run for Congress seriously, unfortunately, I hate to say this, you need to be ready to put up a couple $100,000. And if you're not putting up a couple $100,000 and you're not a current elected official with a base, it's like, well, how are you going to win?
Yeah.
And,
no,
and that's
I know.
The sad
I
part
know.
Of it, right?
Yep, it is the
you
sad
know,
part of it.
So, I mean, who wants to run for Senate? Well, you had Michael Whatley and 6 other candidates, none of whom were credible in any way. I mean, I'm not like a huge Whatley fan. I would have liked to vote for one of them. But I look at it, it's like, well, none of these 6 could run a credible campaign at all. Maybe Whatley can. You know, hopefully he'll start focusing. But, I mean, this guy's got to be scorched earth on Roy Cooper. And, you know, these Southern... born Democrats, they just do this whole, you know, I call it the Jimmy Carter routine, and they just pretend to be some kind of like moderate, and I grew up on a farm, picking crops, how's that, you know, I read the scripture, the Lord wants us to take care of the poor, doesn't want to cut their health care, that's cruel, that's unchristian, like that's Roy Cooper, that's the type of guy he is,
yeah,
and they're very dangerous, because Republicans get intimidated by that stuff.
Yeah. Cunning, which is what the socialists are, too. I want to switch back to the socialists just for a second, because there's a Democratic socialist running in Colorado. I mentioned her briefly earlier, but the reason I want to play this clip is I want you to hear how smooth she is, Rick, because that goes back to asking, you know, how you counter this. Let's listen. It's clip three.
The Democratic Socialists of America are looking to expand their playbook into yet another state. But instead of the Northeast, the organization is looking to expand into a different part of the country, Colorado. The National News Desk, Jeff Harris, joins us. As we know here, the DSA is coming off multiple big congressional wins in New York last week. Explain what is at stake on Tuesday.
So Democratic Representative Diana DeGette, who was first elected to Congress nearly three decades ago, is facing two primary challengers in Colorado's first congressional district. That includes DSA-backed Melot Quiros, a first-time candidate who's calling for Medicare for All, abolishing ICE, and also an arms embargo on Israel.
You know, when I talk to voters about what we're doing and why I'm a Democratic Socialist, I remind them that we have socialism already, right? It's in the roads that we drive on. It's in the schools we send our kids to.
On Monday, the DSA ramping up its efforts to help get Quiros, one of its members, elected in Colorado's first congressional district, sharing a post from its National Electoral Commission, which reads in part, quote, "We have just one more day to send Quiros to Congress. We made 110,000 calls on Friday, but we're not done yet." Over the weekend, Quiros addressing moderate Democrats who are worried about DSA policies.
I point out that they've shown no evidence for why any of these policies would hurt the party in the long term. In fact, there is a mountain of evidence that shows that policies like Medicare for All, Housing First, and universal child care would be immensely helpful to working families and therefore helpful to the party.
Okay, so you see how good she is, Rick. And she's very pretty. And like Mondani, she smiles. She's got a great smile. She's smiling as she's saying these things. How are we going to fight this? Seriously, what is the strategy?
Exposing them and not being intimidated by these people. I mean, Republicans just get so intimidated by everything. It's like, oh, you know, I can't say that. They'll call me a racist.
I know.
Like, wow. That's, and in the South, that's like you just get that all the time from people. It's like, so what, they call you a racist? They call every Republican in the country a racist. Doesn't mean anything anymore. When I was five, I saw Birmingham police with fire hoses on 9-year-old black kids. That's racism. If you're not up in that level, you ain't cutting it. Oh, you insulted me. That's not racism. Come on. I mean, and Republicans are just like, they want to be liked. And that's the problem our candidates have. Donald Trump does not care whether you like him or not. He's not a likable guy. And yet we have these consultants telling you, you need to be likable. You can't be so confrontational. People are sick of the division. No, they're not. They might say they're sick of the division. And then it's like, well, should we have any, you know, let the Democrats in on our board? No, of course not. Like, no, we're divided. We're two countries.
Yeah. Well, I think one of the biggest examples of, for all the world to see, was John McCain running against Barack Obama. I remember seeing him in Wisconsin right after he was the nominee, and we watched that rally because on television we were hopeful. We are for Chicagoans, and so Wisconsin's of interest to us. So John McCain just folded. He just folded. And one of the people in the audience in Wisconsin, it was an outdoor rally, said, Mr. McCain, fight for us. Fight for us. And he laughed. He just, you know, that horrible laugh he did.
Yeah.
So this is kind of an example of what we have. But are you're watching the races around the country. Are there any spots? Well, I'll just pick the Senate where you are optimistic about any kind of win in the Senate.
Well, it's early to talk about everything because it's, you know, 3.5 months out now. But I think Republicans could gain seats in the Senate because of what the Democrats are doing to themselves. And they're you know, you follow what they say, you know, when they're not publicly propagandizing. They're very concerned about this whole thing with these DSA crazies. And what's going to happen is if they're going to keep saying crazy stuff throughout the campaign. And it's up to Republicans. I mean, and anybody, I don't care if you're in a town council race in Kentucky or Montana or wherever it is, and you have a Democratic opponent, you need to say, hey, Mr. Democrat, Ms. Democrat, we're calling on you to denounce this crazy remark that one of your fellow Democrats made. Because that's what they do to us. It's like some Republican says something that's a little off, and then we're all being called on to denounce her. Do you agree with the statement that women shouldn't be allowed to vote? Right? Like, that's what they do to us.
Totally, totally.
So why don't we do it back to them? Oh, you know, I'm not running in New York. Well, yeah, but you're a Democrat. You know, are you proud of your party taking this stand? Right. They need, you know, one of the greatest little things, everybody listening should remember this and never forget it. Never defend, always attack. Whatever you're accused of, just turn it around, make it an attack.
I'm going to write that down.
All the time. Stay on message.
I'm going to write that down. Rick, I just have in front of me a couple of examples of the platform of the Democratic Socialists. So here is one: tax the rich, and there's no threshold. Housing, Medicare,
Rich is anybody with a job, by the way.
Yeah, right. And college for all. College for all. Open borders and mass amnesty. Voting rights for non-citizens and people with criminal convictions. And then, of course, there's the Green New Deal, who people have forgotten what the Green New Deal is, but it's a nightmare. They want to eliminate the U.S. Senate. They want to replace the president and the Supreme Court with an executive and a judiciary. They're serious as death, too, by the way. They're serious. Amnesty for all immigrants and defunding the Department of War. What a world that will be, Rick.
Right. Now, here's how you have fun with these people. What you do is you demand they say they denounce all this, which of course they won't do. But even if they do it, then you demand they sign a pledge denouncing it. Just keep it going, right?
Yeah, I agree with you.
Yeah, again, we talk about how amateurish a lot of our candidates are. A lot of their candidates are pretty amateurish too. You can get them to do stupid things. This is just a game of cat and mouse. But you know, one of the things I've found over the years is that a lot of these local people who run local campaigns are far more qualified to do camp politics than most of these political consultants who don't know anything about it. They just know about it. See, for political consulting business is a business. It's about making money. It's not about winning. Winning is just a secondary thing. How much money you're going to make, that's what's important. And whereas your local people, they're not concerned with how much money they're going to make, and maybe they'll get a contract with the county or something if they win, but it's more about winning. That's what's important. And there's a lot of consultants, it's like, if I make that ad, I have a lobbying contract, and I can't offend these people.
Yeah, so they don't.
Democrats taught me to win at all costs, and Republicans told me it's better to lose than make enemies.
Yeah, no, you've said that before, and I'm hearing you, and I've seen it borne out. I mean, they just have no courage. And the political consultants are really pretty, you're one of them, so you're the exception, Rick, but they are a disgusting bunch, I think, because, in fact, I think it should be explained that political consultants work for both parties. Like, they're just for hire. They're like hired guns who have no ammunition in their guns.
You can't do that as much anymore. I mean, I did that. I was Democrats in one town, Republicans in the next town. It was also, there was also a different era. It was like what they called the third party. There was like the conservative Democrats and the conservative Republicans against the liberal Democrats and the liberal Republicans. Yeah. So, it was just different. But today you can't really do that, because if you are caught working for the other side, then you get blacklisted on the Republican side. So that's a good thing that's happened. Unfortunately, a lot of these Republicans are beyond useless, especially in the one-party states.
Yeah, exactly. Because
everybody's a Republican.
Yeah.
Right?
Hey, Rick, I want to change the subject just for a last bit here before we say goodbye. I would really love to have your thoughts on what's going on with Mitch McConnell. I don't know if you want to weigh in on that, or if you have.
I mean, his health's bad, obviously. And there's AI photos of him going around. And, he may or may not return to the Senate. However, here's what's going on in Kentucky. You have a Democratic governor in Kentucky. So in South Carolina, Lindsey Graham passes, governor appoints his sister, Republicans hold the seat, no issue. But in Kentucky, you got a Democratic governor because, again, Republicans went the DEI route and lost. So they say, we're going to make history. We lost. So now we have a Democratic governor in Kentucky, and the legislature passed a bill, and the governor really doesn't have much say in the matter because I think in Kentucky, like West Virginia, I think the veto can be overridden by a simple majority. But either way, Republicans have so many seats in both houses, it makes no difference. So they passed a law that now instead of the governor appointing a successor in the event of a Senate vacancy, which is the case in, I think, 45, 46 states, it goes to a special election. But, you know, we're too late for, like, if you know, God forbid somebody passes tomorrow, right, you couldn't have a special election. It's too late. You know, and it's a special election to fill the term through through when the November election is certified, or may just be through January 3rd. I don't know. Either way, whether he's alive or not, it doesn't look like he's going to be there to vote anytime soon. So we're short of vote.
Exactly.
Now, we're short of vote, but anyway, he was voting against us anyway on a lot of stuff. So, you know.
Right. Well, yeah, no, it's complex, but I'm not a fan of his. I'm not glad he's sick. I don't wish that on him.
Yeah, but we all owe him a lifetime debt of gratitude for keeping Merrick Garland off the Supreme Court.
Okay, I'll give him that.
Yes.
I'm not giving him much besides,
you know,
that.
It was like in 1992, I'm with a bunch of people, and I'm like, why should I vote for George Bush? I despise George Bush. Why should I vote for this guy? He's a traitor. He betrayed us. And this kid says, put Clarence Thomas on the Supreme Court. And so for the first time, I heard a reason why I should vote for George Bush. And I told myself, I'm going to vote for him. The next day, I felt dirty. I voted for him. I had to wash my hands afterwards.
Well, politics is a messy, messy business. No doubt about it, Rick. I've been a lay person watching it all these years, calling, you know, getting involved, but not really going door to door and that kind of, I have done that, but that's not been my main work. But man, I followed politics in Chicago and been involved in other ways, persuading people, explaining it, you know, advocating for candidates and all of that. And so you got to have some really thick skin to do that. And
and that's right back to, like, why do people run? Because it's $174,000 a year. And everybody you want to have run for U.S. Senate is making a lot more at $174,000 a year. That's the situation. So now I can enjoy my life and make my $300,000 a year, or I can go be a U.S. Senator and worry about every time I go out to eat, somebody's going to, like, spit in my food. Right?
So why doesn't
why
doesn't a person like Mitch McConnell, who has all the money in the world, because his wife has business dealings, shipping dealings with the Chinese communists. She was actually with the vice president of China while he was sick.
He's been there for 42 years now.
Yeah. Well,
it's the only life he knows. It's like,
yeah.
You know.
Well, also, he loves control. I mean, he just loves control. And I've seen him do some really bad things with that. You know, I remember when the Tea Party rose up over Obamacare. And do you remember what Mitch McConnell said about the Tea Party, Rick? Any memory of that?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to destroy them. We're going to destroy them. Yeah.
McConnell agreed to let them, what he did in Obamacare, he made an agreement that they could put that in exchange for the Republicans putting up all the amendments they could, you know, they allowed them to put up any amendment they wanted. In exchange for that, they would speed the vote up so it would be before the Massachusetts special election. So what happens? Scott Brown wins. Now they have 59 votes. Well, if McConnell hadn't agreed to it, they would have never had the 60 votes to pass it. But because McConnell, and then they're like, oh, we got the Stupak Amendment. They'll never vote for it with the Stupak Amendment. Well, every year the Stupak Amendment was a big joke anyway. They voted for it. They got thrown out, right? And it was it. McConnell got played on that really badly.
The one thing we both know, Rick, about Mitch McConnell is that he is a great strategist. I mean, he holds a grip on that Senate. He knew the rules in and out and upside down, and he ran a very tight ship and had tremendous control over it when he was majority leader. And that John Thune would have half that ability right now to control the Senate, the Republican senators. But he doesn't seem to show that same ability. So I do miss that about Mitch McConnell, but I think he needs to make a decision. That's my personal view. I don't think it's right that someone would just sit out and be sick so much and not be able to do their job for the American people. Well, our guest today has been Rick Shafton. I always enjoy talking to Rick about what's going on in the world politically. He's the head of Mountaintop Media and Neighborhood Research and Media, and he always has great insight. So, Rick, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, Sandy. Look forward to the next time.
Absolutely. All right, Sandy Rios on Sandy Rios 24/7.
This is Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
Preborn makes it possible for us to have these conversations. And you all, so many of you have been faithful donors, just amazing. You are amazing to me. I would say that, you know, Preborn advertises on almost all the major talk shows and podcasts. And our show performs as well as, from my understanding, most of those major podcasts. And you know why? It's because of you. It's because of you. There are fewer of you, but you give generously and you really believe in saving babies. And so thank you for that. I'm deeply grateful. I'm deeply grateful. And so for just $28, which is the cost of a dinner right now, in most places where most normal people eat, you can sponsor an ultrasound or introduce a mom to her baby for the very first time. And 100% of your donation will go towards saving those babies. Just go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy.
The Sandy Rios 24/7 podcast are available at AFR.net. Back to Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
Do you really believe in open borders and not having deportations? That's just incredibly contrary to law enforcement and security.
America has a really long history of welcoming working class immigrants. My grandmother and her mother came through Ellis Island and worked from Germany and worked as seamstresses. I mean, we have
illegal aliens in the country. Don't they need to be removed?
We believe that demilitarizing the border, that violent oppression of working class immigrants who come here, is not something that most Americans want. And I think the backlash to President Trump's policies really show that.
Okay, so that's the voice of Grace Mauser, and that was Griff Jenkins from Fox interviewing her. We have a history. We have a history in this country of welcoming working class immigrants, especially the ones charging across the border. I don't think that happened in the past. I think working class immigrants came on ships through Ellis Island and were vetted, and they couldn't come unless they had a relative here to support them. Yeah, but maybe she doesn't know that part. And then the violent opposition of working immigrants coming across the border, the violent opposition. How dare we do that? Because those people, they're just workers. Some of them happen to be murderers and thieves and, you know, too, but I'm sure that doesn't really bother her because that's what communism does anyway. They kill their own people and they don't care who they kill. So, I mean, it's just such a twisting. I want to read a little bit to you. This is the Democratic Socialist of America platform. A little bit. The U.S. political and economic system is failing the working class. Millions struggle with low wages, dangerous working conditions, and limited control over our own lives, all while the top 1% has gotten richer and richer. Now, let me promise you, friends, I have been in Russia. I have been in North Vietnam, Vietnam when it's a communist country. I've been to North Korea. I've not been to Cuba, but I've been to China several times. And trust me, you know, just in case you didn't know, they have limited control over their own lives. They have no control over their own lives. Ask those Chinese that were shut off in apartment buildings during COVID when they had a no tolerance for COVID policy and were screaming, dying in their high-rise apartment buildings if they had a choice. That is communism control, and that's what socialism is. And socialism is just another name. In fact, the communists would tell you that socialism is not separate from communist, democratic socialism. They actually use that in the country's names, the democratic socialists of whatever. I wish I could get it off the top of my head, but the Russians use that term. I think the North Vietnamese did also. Just don't be deceived, okay? Don't be ignorant about this, friends, because there is a wickedness crossing the land, and we need to be smart and fight smart, okay? So we'll talk about this more on the show as the days unfold. Well, before we say goodbye, remember, Preborn is a sponsor. If you want to help Preborn, go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy, and help us save the lives of those precious babies. And I want to thank you for listening to today's edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.